Good evening, and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, December 25th, 2017. What do youth leaders from South Sudan think about their futures after 4 years of conflict?
Healing needs acceptance, but to acceptance, there must be truth.
I think one thing that would bring people to that level of healing is if perhaps there could be some sense of justice.
It needs determination, and it also needs commitment from the people and the leadership itself.
And a new take on what the Christmas festive season means in one African country.
I think this year's festive season is very hopeless, as reflected by the state of the economy and the total collapse of the social and the economic fabric has a huge consequence on the way citizens are going to celebrate.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. As South Sudanese look forward to 2018, the memories of the last 4 years of deadly conflict remain vivid in the minds of many young men and women worried about the future. John Tanza sat down with members of the South Sudan Young Leaders Forum last month in Kigali to learn what comes to their minds when they talk about the conflict and the best way to forgive individuals who may have committed crimes during the violence.
My name is Rajab Mohandis. I work for the South Sudanese Network for Democracy and Elections, SUNDE.
Thank you. My name is Juma David Agustino. I am a politician.
Atong Majok Kur. I am a lawyer by profession, chairperson of the board of directors of the Media Authority.
And I'm Mario Konyan Joseph Nakor. I'm currently shuttling between London and Nairobi, doing some things to do with the young South Sudanese refugees.
And I'm Koiti Emily. I'm a medical doctor. That's my background. But I'm the Interim Chief Administrator of the SSYLF, or the South Sudan Young Leaders Forum Secretariat.
My name is John Pendango. I'm a South Sudanese activist and civil society leader in Kenya. South Sudan Peace Coalition, consortium of exile organizations, and I'm a co-founder of Anna Taban, that's operating in Cuba.
And my name is Carl Taban Kisten. I work for the South Sudan Law Society, South Sudanese.
I'm called Juma Kenneth. I work for a youth organization called African Youth Action Network.
Thank you, but let's engage our moods on things that touch your life. A lot of people have been telling me that South Sudan needs to go through a healing process. Now, if I may ask you, Rajab, what can bring healing in South Sudan?
Okay, thank you. There are a number of things that we could do as South Sudanese in order to bring healing in the country. And the first is an honest acknowledgement of the situation in our country. And by accepting, admitting, especially for the parties involved in the conflict in the country, by admitting that, yes, this is true, it begins to heal the wounds or the pains in the hearts of our people.
Aluel, do you agree with Rajab? What are your experiences?
I do very much agree with what Rajab has said.
Why do you agree with him?
Because I think what we're going through is partly because of the trauma, you know. We have people that have known nothing but war in their lives. And so when it comes to reaction, the first thing that comes to their mind is violent, because we believe it's the only way we can achieve the change or the difference we want to see. But just on top of what Rajab said in regards to acceptance or acknowledgement, I think it also requires... It needs determination, it needs commitment, and it also needs, what's the word I'm looking for?
Commitment from who? Determination
from,
by who?
From Wait. Yes, commitment from the people and the leadership itself. I think it's an initiative that needs to be owned by people right after acceptance, you know.
Nakoa, your take on this?
I think, personally, in terms of the healing, it's such a big and quite complicated, but I think one thing that would bring people to that level of healing is if perhaps there could be some sense of justice and accountability, because up until some people see some people who they felt were the cause of the pain that they've been going through brought to some accountability or come forward to acknowledge, I think that healing process will take much longer. But so perhaps with some sort of justice and accountability, that could actually help with regards to him.
John Payne.
Yes.
You have been writing a lot of blogs on the issues to do with South Sudan. I rarely read anything about healing. Is that omission purposeful?
Oh, no, it's not purposeful, but when we talk of healing, I see it as a backstage process.
Can you explain that a little bit when you say backstage? I don't understand.
Yeah, I actually concur with Nakua. I call it backstage because what we want immediately now is to stop the pain. Because you can't heal when the pain is not over. When the wound, actually, the actors of the wound, those who are inflicting the wound, are doing it. So no wound can heal when it is still being stopped. So what I want done first is to stop the war. When the war stops, and then now we bring in the sort of, we replace the revenge, because people are on a revenge mission now. We replace revenge with a semblance, which is like justice. You take somebody to court or ask somebody to confess. Then now the person who is about to carry out the revenge will now say, there is a replacement to revenge. Now healing comes in when there is truth and justice in place of revenge.
Emily, you're based in Juba, where action is taking place. In your own way, what would you say are some of the things that could bring healing to the people in South Sudan?
I think it has to be all things that can restore confidence in the people, in what their country is, and that it is possible to realize everything that drove them to, first of all, thinking about fighting for a country that they have today. And that means reaching out to them and asking and responding to their asks. And that requires a leadership that is willing to be responsive to the needs of its people. And as Raja put it, that there are grievances with the people, there is pain of the people, there is suffering. That has to be relied on to define everything that we want to take on this path of nation and state building. Because if we do not put the needs and the suffering of the people at the center of defining every intervention going forward, then we are losing it. We are leaving the people behind and taking on what elites think are the solutions. And so far, it's evident that can never cut it. It has brought for us conflict that is not, there is no sign of it going away, except if we engage in the kind of initiatives that we've undertaken, like the Kigali Convention we are in as young leaders today. Otherwise, it remains almost hopeless.
Juma, David, you can hear here people are all saying that this is a need for confidence. Emily brought a very key word here, confidence, so that a healing process starts. What is your perspective from somebody who was an insider, if you like?
Well, thank you, John Tanza. Fundamentally, a country that we all belong to now is bleeding. And I quite agree with
all. And people say it's bleeding because of politicians like you.
I am definitely not saying no. I am not saying no. It's because we, the politicians, have become self-centered, that we cannot see what is good for the common citizen of South Sudan.
And why is that so?
That is so simply because we have forgotten so soon where we came from. It has never taken us 36 months since we got our country. And here, we have to run it down again. And therefore, listening to what they say here, and listening to myself, as someone who was once an insider, it is truly important that we, the politicians, come back to our senses and accept that we have wronged the people of South Sudan. We have taken wrong decisions that have cost this country lives, have caused this country's massive property destruction, and have caused this country a vacuum of a generation that is now in a limbo of whether we will cross the road or not.
And so what would bring healing? I mean, we are talking about what can address the pain that is there. I know that all that you're saying is correct, but what is it that can bring healing? I mean, in your own words.
I mean, my own understanding of what will bring healing to our situation now is first the acceptance by the leadership in South Sudan and every person who is in leadership to say we have done wrong to our own country and to ourselves.
Taban, your name in Arabic means suffering, is that so?
Yeah.
So, I'm not picking on your name, but we have Anna Taban. It's a campaign by young people like you who are trying to use creativity and arts to, you know, depict the image of the situation in South Sudan. And so, tell us a little bit about your perspective on what can bring healing.
Thank you, John Tanza. And I think, basically, let me approach it from a perspective that healing is a process. Mm-hmm. And I think it takes multiple processes for us to reach to the end of the healing. And I think what I want to link it to our visit to the memorial site, where one of the tour guides tell us that forgiveness is something that you have to work for, and you have to first forgive yourself before you start forgiving others. So coming to that, and I think South Sudanese, and especially the young people, has a lot to talk about. And I think a space where people can start talking, a space where people can speak the truth, a space where there's a will for each and every person to speak without any restrictions, we provide an opportunity for us to start the healing process. And I think it's by coincidence that my name has been like that. And I think it's because maybe of the history where we were born. But I don't want to go through that. But I think if we are given the opportunity, as young leaders, if we are given the opportunity to speak to the people, and I think I would just want to concur with many of the colleagues that have said that healing needs acceptance. But to acceptance, there must be truth. Okay? We need to speak the truth. Okay? We need to know and acknowledge that I have committed something and I am the person who did it. We need to identify those which have gone missing. We need to tell people where the next person is, and where this person, the reason why he got lost, or she got lost.
The voices of young South Sudanese men and women in Kigali, talking with my colleague John Tanza about the healing process in their country after 4 years of conflict. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Why are men becoming midwives in South Sudan? Find out when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your favorite garment to wear on special or formal occasions?
I just put on what I feel like, what is smart for me and everything. Eh? Can put on anything which is good for me, for swag and everything.
When you put on a suit, at least you look better, and the friends, and they also identify you that as an important person.
Lace we do. A colored one, maybe indigo or turquoise color, sewn in the form of a straight dress.
Now I'm into African wear, so I prefer wearing the African print to church, to work, on occasions.
Yeah, I like katanga. And of course, I also like katanga because it makes me look nice and fit. At least I feel comfortable wherever you go.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. South Sudanese men say they've decided to take up a job that's traditionally reserved for women in order to help provide vital health care to would-be mothers in their communities. Male midwives say by embracing their work, they also hope to erase the negative stereotypes of midwifery. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Juba.
Michael Mayan Peter is a certified midwife working at Wau Teaching Hospital. Peter says he has worked at the hospital for 2 years now and helped deliver hundreds of babies.
What motivates me mostly, it is due to the effect that I have seen our mothers are dying for complications that are preventable. Like when we look at the maternal mortality rate, it's very high. This is why I have joined it, in order to help my community.
Peter says he is not bothered by the negative stereotypes about his job and believes with time and education, more men will take up the role of midwives.
For the community, because they feel that you did not know about knowledge about it, there is ignorance always. But we use also to do health education so that more people can join us also to practice this skill.
Tobe Atiebakot is a midwife working in Awil North County in former Northern Bahar Ghazal State. Akot decided to become a midwife 6 years ago after he saw many women in his community die in childbirth. He says part of the reason there were not enough midwives was because only women were doing the work.
The male educated are so less. They are very few. So that's why I committed myself to attend this in case to help my retired communities by reducing the high-risk complications, especially in deliveries, in pregnancies, and post-deliveries.
Akot says he loves his job.
For me, I'm very comfortable. Even the ladies also, they are very comfortable. And I'm also very proud because I like this career of mine to carry on.
Christopher Almerson is a nursing tutor at Meridi School of Nursing and Midwifery. Almerson says a few years ago, people didn't accept the idea of having men as midwives.
By then, even the community, they are confused. But when we start telling them, and then the service that male nurses or male midwife, they used to render, it is very, very good. They used to appreciate.
Almerson says, over the past few years, he has seen a big change in society's attitude towards male midwives.
By then, the community, they don't want their wife to be delivered by male midwife, but now they understood it, so they can be delivered by male midwife.
An estimated 500 certified midwives and nurses provide the majority of primary health care in South Sudan, where the medical industry suffers from acute shortages in resources and personnel. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
South Sudanese refugees at the Bidi Bidi settlement in Uganda have a hard life, residing in tents and mud huts and surviving on international aid. But a little over a week ago, the refugees put aside their hardships and held a talent show with songs and plays that touched on the war back home, but that also expressed hope for peace. Halima Athumani attended the show in the Yumbi district of northern Uganda and brings us this report.
Bidi Bidi is the world's largest refugee settlement, according to the United Nations Refugee Agency. It houses more than 300,000 South Sudanese who fled their country's civil war, now entering its fifth year. Memories of the war came flowing out, but this time in acts presented at the talent show, ranging from dance, rap, music, and drama acts. The beats came hard and strong in the songs. Instrumentals and dances performed on a makeshift stage that had no cover, exposing performers and the audience alike to the hot sun. The Kejebere music and dance group won the show with a range of dances from Uganda and South Sudan. 15-year-old sisters Maneno Nunas and Vicky Nyoka, dancers in the group, were brought to the Bidi Bidi settlement from Yei by their stepmother, who built a small hut for them and left the girls to fend for themselves. To survive, they sometimes sell food rations to buy other necessities. Maneno explained why they joined the talent show.
The reason that we should avoid thinking of those bad things about our parents and the bad things that they are doing for us. We need to forget home problem. Yeah, that makes us to join dancing.
Yonat Kundane, the Public Information Associate for UNHCR Uganda, says the talent show will be a recurring activity.
Our main objective is to create social cohesion between the different ethnic groups and the host community.
The winning team from the Bidibidi talent show will be mentored by local artists. Afrobeat musician Solomon Sentongo explains the reason he chose to work with the refugee youth.
These people are always feeling left alone. So as an artist, actually a young artist, I'm here to give them hope. So they will not actually be despaired, but they will feel important. And that's why we're here.
Reggae musician Inizu Ronald Peace had a strong message to the warring factions in South Sudan.
Hey, Mr. Soldier Man, what you fighting for? Hey, Mr. President, what have you done for my residents? Why this much greed? I see your eyes full of evil. Can't you see? These guns are gonna kill us today. Can't you see? The one love is gonna heal us. South Sudan, because we are one.
Above all, the show demonstrated that Bidibidi's got talent. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Yumbe, Uganda.
Traditionally, the Christmas festive season in Zimbabwe has been a time for loved ones to travel and spend time with their families. But this year's events are giving a new twist to the season. Reporter Kudzai Zvinavashi looks into how Christmas will be for Zimbabweans.
This holiday season, Zimbabweans are looking back on an eventful year. From soldiering on in a cash crisis, registering to vote, and ousting the nonagenarian president of 37 years in power, Gift Ostalos is the spokesperson of Tajamuka, a citizen movement pressure group that staged protests during Mugabe's time in power.
In terms of our history and our culture, we celebrate this by connecting with the families, those abroad travel, those who are in the metropolitan provinces travel to rural areas.
Despite the new political developments in the country, Ostalos thinks Christmas this year is less optimistic.
I think this year's festive season is very hopeless, as reflected by the state of the economy. There's a radical hike of prices and the total collapse of the social and the economic fabric has a huge consequence on the way citizens are going to celebrate.
Thokozani Kupe is vice president of the opposition movement for democratic change. She says this Christmas will be a terrible one for Zimbabweans.
The truth of the matter is that there won't be any difference. Money is not available in banks. People don't have money. And as we heard that, even the president said bonuses are going to be paid, but next year it is one and the same old story. It's just like any other day. For me, I'm not seeing any difference at all, even with this new dispensation.
However, Eddie Cross, an MDC member of parliament representing Bulawayo South, is more upbeat.
I think Zimbabweans are starting to feel that there's movement. And I think they're very cautious, but I think so far, I think the early indications are that 2018 is going to be much better. I think that most Zimbabweans will feel a little bit more confident about the coming year.
Kindness Paradza, a member of the ruling ZANU-PF and the member of parliament for Makonde, he thinks this festive season is looking bright.
This is going to be the best Christmas for Zimbabweans. You know why? We're not going to experience any roadblocks that, like what we've experienced in the past years. And also, I think, as the president said, the prices are going, basic commodities are going to go down. And not only that, I'm sure the banks are going to be able to dispense some money. And also, you are aware that all the civil servants are going to be paid. This is the best Christmas they've ever had in about 17 or so years.
Many Zimbabweans are ending the year with the cautious hope that new government will bring the gifts it's promised. Economic growth and jobs. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvinavashe from Harare.
The Episcopal Bishop of Onduruba Diocese in South Sudan, Matthew Taban Peter, says South Sudanese must be hopeful for peace despite the suffering that has forced many out of the country as they celebrate Christmas festivities. Peter tells Demo Silva that the signing of the cessation of hostilities in Addis Ababa is a noble Christmas gift for the people of South Sudan and that the warring parties must respect what they've signed.
Christmas is a special day for celebration. And why do we celebrate? It's because of the gift God has given to us by sending his son, incarnation. You know, in our gloom and despair, sometimes we fear that sorrows and troubles will never end. But because of the mercies of God, when he sees the world is in despair, in gloom, just like when Isaiah was talking to the family of the Jews, he wants to change. And our message today, if you make this application on our citizens in South Sudan, I think we should take this Christmas to be a special gift for us. It's a gift of transformation. It's a gift that we have been in gloom. We have been in darkness. A light has come. And that light, once we're seeing in light, when we're living in light, then we can be able to be orderly. We can be able to be in the spirit of forgiveness, the spirit of reconciliation, the spirit of love. Because we do not love God, but God loves us. The good news of the Christmas is not, you know, the physical things, celebration, partying. No, it's the, you know, it's just inception of God's love in our midst. This is the most fundamental thing that all of us, as Christians in South Sudan and even globally, we should focus on, the love of God. And that's the message, that's the gospel.
Many South Sudanese are scattered by the ongoing conflict. Some in the refugees camp, some have gone into UN camps. And hunger is at peak, and people seem to have lost hope. What is that message of hope in particular that you want to give to the people of South Sudan during this Christmas season?
Christmas reminds us that with God, these things can end. Whether you're a refugee, whether you are in the IDPs, whether in the POAC, whatever situation you have, the Christmas will send us the message that these things God intended them to end. The people who are in refugees, the people who are actually being tormented because of this war, because of the hunger, you see, because the light has come and is the counselor, is the prince of peace. Peace means what? Peace is not only the absence of violence or the guns, the silence of the guns, but peace involves our mind, our hearts, you know, our feelings, the environment. At least we have hope instead of despair. God is in power. God is in control.
All right. Some people might argue that the peace that they are eagerly waiting for is just taking long, and 2018 is coming. From your personal perspective, what do you want to see in 2018?
You know, we heard that the cessation of hostilities has been signed, and I think I was praising God for it. And that's sort of, the cessation of hostilities, it should not be just on the paper. It must be a practical thing. And that's a noble gift for South Sudanese. A noble gift for South Sudanese and a noble gift for this special Christmas. And I believe with it, if what they put in paper is implemented, the 2018 will be a special year. It's year of peace, year of return, year of reconstruction, year of real reconciliation among our people.
That's reporter Demo Silva talking with Episcopal Bishop Anduruba Diocese in South Sudan, Matthew Taban Peter. That's our show for this Christmas Day. We leave you with the song Bona Wire by Afore Amponza. We've been listening to Afore Amponza with a song Bon Wire. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for listening. Do you have a comment about our show? Well, we'd love to hear from you. You can find us on the web at SouthSudan@voanews.com, or you can reach us on Facebook at South Sudan in Focus. Join us tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.